wasn't until I saw the rule lived in a monastic setting, when I went to Mount St. Scholastica for the first time to actually talk about touching the sacred through poetry. I was leading a retreat on poetry, and we were able to stay in the monastery. We saw how the sisters lived and how everything they do, from how they eat dinner to pray to interact with one another, everything they do is based on the rule. And then it all began to come together for me. So if at all you ever have the opportunity, I know there's an Anglican monastery near the mission, the old mission church, or any of the other monasteries. Someone just said there's a Trappistine monastery in Northern California. If you have the opportunity to go to a monastery, and anybody can go to a monastery and stay, hospitality is a major value. So there's always guest rooms, and it's always a free will donation. They don't ask you to pay anything. They'll suggest, you know, what the donation is, but that's about it. And so I think to see it lived was a huge aspect for me, to see how the sisters incorporated that and how they seemed to sort of, the ease with which they seemed to go through their days and combine work and prayer, because everybody in a monastery has to work too. So the monastery has to be self-supporting. So it was a real eye-opener for me to see how the rule was lived. And of course there's some crazy stuff in the rule as well. Let's not be blind to that. But for example, when you know, he basically says, you know, if you warn people once, twice, three times, more than three times, then give them a swift kick in the butt, basically. You know, we wouldn't agree with that in the 21st century. But it's amazing how psychologically advanced he actually was in the 6th century, because he says things like the abbot or the prioress is not to be a disciplinarian, but a physician, a disciplinarian for the wayward, but a physician for the wayward. You know, in other words, he's more interested in helping people amend their faults than he is in punishing them. And that's pretty psychologically advanced for the Roman Empire of which he was a part. So I think you're absolutely right that the rule, going to the rule cold, can be a difficult thing. That's why it's good to read it with some of these guides to the rule, like Joan Chittister's or mine or Esther DeWall's, and then seeing how it's lived in a contemporary context is important. Thanks for that great question. Thank you. Okay, I'll try not to be so long-winded on the next one. Yes, yeah.
This question is from Patricia Tour, who couldn't come here.
Sure.
Last week, I think we had Adam McCoy here, right? And they're closing the monastery there. And she was saying there's such a decline in new postulants coming in. And yet, I don't know if you know our friend Norveen Vest.
I know Norveen.
She's a great friend. And she said a few years ago that oblates are increasing in number, and
yeah,
postulants are declining. And so she wanted you to talk about that a little.
Oh, well, a big hello and a hug to Norveen, another great Benedictine writer, and her books on the rule are wonderful. The phenomenon today is that, yes, people entering, making a lifetime commitment to monastic life is in steep decline. But the phenomenon, the incredible phenomenon, is the number of lay people who are lay associates of the monastery is shooting way up. And it's also appealing now. You might have heard of the nuns, N-O-N-E-S. Okay, no religious affiliation. Well, there's an organization now called the nuns, N-U-N-S, and nuns, N-O-N-E-S. And they're young people with no religious affiliation, but they have seen in the Catholic sisters, particularly the monastic sisters, a kind of authentic Christianity. And they meet with them, they meet with the nuns by Skype, these young people do, men and women, boys and girls. They meet with the nuns by Skype to learn about, you know, the monastic values. This is what is appealing to people today. It's a spirituality that stresses community over competition, consensus over conflict, simplicity over consumption, and quietude and silence over all this noise, including the white noise of social media that infiltrates our lives. And this is becoming very appealing to young people and people of my age as well, people in the professional world. So, for example, at Mount St. Scholastica Monastery, where I'm a lay associate, there are now about 105 sisters, maybe. Used to be a community of 600. There's 105 now. There's 300 Benedictine lay associates. Okay? A monastery I spoke at in September in Pecos, New Mexico. Gorgeous monastery. There's 8 monks there. 273 lay associates. So that's where things are going now, and that's why it's important for the lay people to really understand the spirituality and be able to talk about it and pass it on. And lately, you know, more and more lay people are going to live in the monasteries. You know, they might be widows or widowers, they might be divorced, they might be single. And they're going in to live in the monasteries and work in the monasteries. They're just not taking the lifetime vows. So I think what's going to happen, and Norveen might agree or disagree, is that monastic life is going to become again what it was in the beginning, which was a small group of small communities of people who wanted to seek God alone. And then, you know, those communities kind of, they fed everybody else in the world who would come, you know, with their struggles and their problems. And lay people are going to go out from the monastic communities, what they've learned from them, and they're going to bring it out into the professional world and into family life. So I think we're on the cusp of a major, major phenomenon in monastic life, where the monastics are going to be outside of the monastery. Okay, thank you. Again, too long-winded. I'm sorry, my answers are too long. Okay.
I am not a Catholic. I am not anything. But I... Oh, that's true. That could be a possibility.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, I... for reasons that we don't have to talk about right now, I ended up meditating and going to retreats for Buddhist meditation. And you hear a lot about mindfulness now. That's what it was in the 1980s, when I was involved in it for the 1980s. And it's very similar to what you're talking about. There's a small group, and then people, and there's a lot of us out there. And it's been most helpful, and too bad I'd like to try a monastery next.
Yeah. I think you'd like it.
Yeah, but we were in monasteries. That's where we would meet.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's happening all over. I think you're correct. Thank you.
Well, we really do need monasteries. I mean, we need them to be kind of spiritual centers. Mm-hmm. You know, Thomas Merton, who was really led a very profligate life before he became a Trappist monk, went to Gethsemane and he said, "Now I know what has been holding the world together and keeping it from cracking into pieces. It is the prayers of this monastery and others like it." And I think we need those centers. You know, monasteries and Quaker friend houses are probably two of the only places that still practice esteem for silence in our culture. So, I mean, we need to cherish these monasteries and help them to keep going. But they're not going to look like they did in the 50s, you know, with 600, 500 monks and sisters living in them. So, thank you for that question. Thank you. Hi.
I read most of your book, and I really could relate to so much of what you were writing about, including your Italian heritage, which I share with you.
All right.
and I know about Italian fathers, etc. But I wondered if you, without being too intrusive on your life, could explain how you, as a workaholic, and I could identify with that too, through the 70s, moving forward, working about 45 years of my life, trying to get ahead, make a living. What brought you into not being an overachiever? What brought you this tranquility? Or what happened, if you could explain that in your life, mm-hmm. without, again, trying to intrude upon your privacy?
Oh, yeah. No, that's a really good question. Thank you for that question. Well, I think I'm still struggling. My husband will tell you that I still struggle with being a workaholic and an overachiever. It's still, we all have our drawbacks that we carry with us, and they come from a very early age for most of us. They start at a very early age, and they're very hard to shed completely. So it's a constant struggle. I think hanging around monasteries helped me a lot, because the idea is that you live to just be. I mean, just the fact that you're here is enough, and you don't have to prove anything. The fact that you're here was a gift that was given to you by God, and that's enough. You know, Brother Quinn, I want to save time for us. We may go 5 minutes over to show you the clip of my friend Brother Paul Quinnen, with whom I wrote The Art of Pausing. He's been a tremendous influence on my life. He's been a Trappist monk for over 60 years. And there just aren't going to be men like him. They're going to be extinct. Men who entered the monastery at 17 and spent their entire lives in a life of contemplation, not going to exist anymore. So we're working on a new book together, Brother Paul and I, Letters Back and Forth. And what I wanted to say was, I asked him, what is the purpose of the Trappist life in the 21st century, in this profile that I did on him for PBS? And he says, the purpose of life is to show you don't have to have a purpose. The purpose of life is to live your life. And that was very freeing to me, because to this day, and my husband can attest to this, I'm not doing enough. I'm not writing enough. My speaking isn't good enough. My talk wasn't good enough. I'll go home and say the talk in Santa Barbara could have been this, this, and this better. And, he says you gotta shed all that. You gotta shed all that. It's enough to just be. The fact that you're here is enough. And he's also said something. It's enough to be who you are and love who you love. And it sounds very simplistic, but it was very freeing for me to hear those words, because I always, thought that I had to earn my parents' love. I had to earn my parents' love by getting 100 on every test and by, being number one on the honor roll and that kind of thing. I'm sure some of you can identify with that sort of thing in your family background. But, it's okay just to be who you are. So I don't know. I'm still struggling like you. So. Okay. Good. Enough of an answer, or I didn't answer? Okay. All right. Thank you.
I'm not sure how much this would have to do with the contemplative life, maybe a lot, but if you could tell us a little bit about your organic farm.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, it's really little. It's only 10 acres, which is nothing here in California. But we have alfalfa and oats and things, and a farmer uses that for he raises pigs and cattle organically, and that's what it feeds. It feeds them, and it feeds his chickens. And so we feel really good about that. But I do a lot of my writing out there. It's a way for me to, we have a little cabin on the land, and it's a way for me to, no internet. So I'm not checking, social media every 5 minutes. But I think if Macrina Whitaker, who's another beautiful Benedictine writer, Sister Macrina Whitaker, writes about everybody has to have a magic spot, you know, a spot that's swept clean of all their concerns, and they can just go there and be, and that's kind of the alfalfa farm is kind of my magic spot. And I think we all need to have that. It might be our backyard if you live in a beautiful place like Santa Barbara. It might very well be that. It might be a park or a garden. And I think when we can't get to that kind of a place physically, I think we need to go to a place like that in our mind, you know, to remember what is a place that made us feel at peace, and go to that place in our mind when we're in a, you know, when we're in a crowded or tense situation, you know, to have a magic spot that you can go to in your mind. So, thank you for the question.
Before we watch what you're going to show us, you mentioned Facebook, and I have had the pleasure of being on your Facebook a few times, and I'm wondering if you would let the people, let us know how to access your Facebook.
Yeah, books. Sure. Everybody should take, I've got a bookmark for everybody to take home, and it's got my Facebook, whatever name, and Twitter as well. And I think it's just Judith Valente and Judith Valente author. And, you know, both of them have the same stuff on them. And if you ask for a friend request, there's somebody from who helps me with social media, and she accepts every friend request unless it comes from, like, some crazy place, you know, across the ocean, you know, some crazy country. She will accept your friend. And what I do is I try to put a reflection out. I try to do it every Sunday, and it's often on a theme, a contemplative theme. And then my website, www.judithvalente.com, also has these reflections that I've written. It has a collection of those reflections that I've written. And, you know, you might find a need for them if you're looking for something, you know, some inspiration during, you know, Advent that's coming up or Lent that's coming up. You know, you might take a look at some of them and find something in them.
I wanted to add that Judith already has Santa Barbara on her Facebook. She took pictures yesterday walking to the mission and back, so we're famous.
Yeah, yeah, and we hope maybe Michael will give me some of his photos from today. Maybe Michael Dean will forward to me some of the photos, because I don't think we took any. Maybe my husband will take some in a little bit. Anyway, other questions or comments? I'm really interested in what you have to say about the contemplative life. I always learn from you all when I go places.
I was most appreciative of your reminding us to be observant. Nobody does that these days. Wake up, you know, observe. And one of the things that I do here in Santa Barbara is engage with seniors in nursing homes musically. And one of the songs I often use with them is that famous one, What a Wonderful World. And of course, what it does is it describes all of creation in four stanzas. I could recite them if you would like.
Yes, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I'll give you the lyrics to a song that you know quite well. Huh? You want me to sing it? You sing along too. It begins, I see trees of green. Now think of this as observing, okay? I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. That's your message. I see clouds, skies of blue, and clouds of white, bright blessed days, dark sacred nights, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, what do you do? How do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They'll learn much more than I'll ever know. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Whoa. We're sure having a great day. We, you know, got song and images, photographs, and music. Well, this will be a little maybe anticlimactic for you. But before we show the little video of Brother Paul, he says a lot of interesting things in there. And one of them he says is be listening for this when he talks about, he says contemplation is just a big fat word for gratitude. You know, because that's a question people often ask is, what is contemplation? What does it mean to be contemplative? And he kind of answers that. And then he says something really interesting about if you think you've got the spiritual life all figured out, you're in trouble. He has a really good answer for that. But I want to just say before we end with my friend Brother Paul that I love Broadway shows, as mentioned in the opening, and I love this show, Dear Evan Hansen, as it comes to Santa Barbara. It won the 2018 Tony Award, and it's a story of a teenager, high school student who is feels like a social outcast, suffers from social anxiety, and he begins to put some things on the internet. He begins to put some messages on the internet that then go viral. And all of a sudden, you know, 4,000, 5,000 kids are reading what he has to write. And they sing this song, and the lyrics are so powerful. It made me think of Your Wonderful World. But this is sort of a spontaneous thing that I thought of being with you here today, that what you are doing is building community. You are a community. And that means that each and every person here never has to feel alone. And if you do feel alone, you're wrong. You're on the wrong track because you're not alone. You have this beautiful community all around you. And Dear Evan Hansen sings this song, You Will Be Found. And I'll just read some of the lyrics. Have you ever felt like nobody was there? Have you ever felt forgotten in the middle of nowhere? Have you ever felt like you could disappear? Like you could fall and no one would hear? Well, let that lonely feeling wash away. 'Cause when you don't feel strong enough to stand, you can reach out your hand. And even when the dark comes crashing through, when you need a friend to carry you, when you're broken on the ground, you will be found. You will be found. So all of you, you will be found. Thank you for this time together. I will carry all of you in my heart. It's been a beautiful experience to be here in Santa Barbara. And so now I'll introduce you to a great friend, Brother Paul Quinnen.
The Lumber Shed at the Abbey of Gethsemane in northern Kentucky. It's late February. Each night at 8 o'clock, Brother Paul Quinnen walks to the shed as he has every night for 20 years. He goes around back where he finds his mattress. This is where he will sleep. Outdoors, no matter the weather.
I can't be a full-time hermit, but I can be a nighttime hermit. And there's something about waking up in the middle of the night and there's nobody around. There's a kind of edge of solitude that you cannot experience in any other way.
Here, a monk seeks to live every moment in the presence of God, in unity with God. Brother Paul came to Gethsemane 52 years ago. He was 17, inspired by reading the autobiography of the famous Trappist monk Thomas Merton, who introduced many Americans to the contemplative life. Merton would eventually become his spiritual director and would encourage Brother Paul to write. Thomas Merton said monks and poets are people who live on the margins of society. Brother Paul decided to become both. He says monks and poets remind us to pay attention to the world around us, to focus on what's essential.
Poetry is the language of the heart, and it's the language of the imagination. And so the mind abides in silence. Contemplation is an abiding in silence. And what comes out of silence are words of the heart, words of love. When the heart is really full, the mouth goes silent.
Indeed, many contemplatives say the transcendent is beyond words. Brother Paul has published 3 books of his poetry and is working on a 4th.
The hood, a hiding place for the head, a portable anonymity, a refuge from artificial light, the cover to make dimness dimmer, to make time slow down.
Ideas for his poems usually come to him on long, solitary walks across the monastery's vast stretches of woods and fields. During each walk, he writes a haiku, a Japanese form of poetry, usually 3 lines, 17 syllables, and set in nature.
The monastery is a poetic context to begin with, and we live in a beautiful environment, and nature is so present day in and day out. I discovered the haiku. And the haiku is such a short form. I started combining with my meditation practice. Above dim snowfields, lone light of Venus, lone wail of goose pleading for spring. You're in God's beauty, and it's physical. It's almost like a symphony flowing by me as I walk along, relaxed, and it's a beautiful experience.
Occasionally, over the years, he would climb to the top of this water tower until finally the abbot closed it off. Brother Paul quips, "This used to be a fun place." It was this little cottage, the Hermitage, where Thomas Merton spent years in isolation, praying and writing. Retreatants visit the abbey year-round, seeking to slow down at a place where prayer is the main form of activity.
I think they come here seeking for quiet and an atmosphere of prayer and maybe some seeds of wisdom and just to see what it is to live this kind of life.
What purpose do you see in living the Trappist life in the modern world?
Well, I think the purpose of the monastic life in the modern world is to show that we don't need a purpose. The purpose of life is life, and you are to be just to be. Everybody measures their importance by how useful they are. So you need to shatter that. You know, somebody has to come along now and say, listen, you know, that's not it. That's not what life is.
48 monks now live at the abbey. Once there were more than 200. Brother Paul says many people are still attracted to the regular prayer and quiet rhythms of monastic life, but few are willing to stay.
I wish they would perceive the genuineness of the life. A man has to have, you know, a home and a career, and these are ways of achieving identity. Well, what we do is, in a sense, forsake our identity. We give up our identity to get a new identity, which really God formulates for us.
And yet, Brother Paul says you don't have to live in a monastery to seek what is important.
If you just sort of rest with what you have, be grateful for it. There again, the chemistry of gratitude can transform what you have. Contemplation is simply maybe a big fat word for gratitude. To sense the presence of God in life and around me and in other people gives me a very deep gratitude.
Today, the average age of the monks here is 70. Funerals are a regular part of life.
A monk lives in the presence of death. You come here to die. You're going to give up your whole life. If you decide to give up your whole life to Christ, well, it's in Christ's hand. Curved walkway. The burial ground fills with practical sounds from Tears Bell, drenching the dumb, unheeding crosses. Alone, I skirt around this rim of destiny, stirred by the bell, till someday I'm left unbusied in this round, silent keep.
Brother Paul says that to be a monk is to live at the heart of a mystery, to live in a perpetual state of becoming. To him, that is both the power and poetry of monastic life.
We never get there. As Merton said, if you think you have arrived, you're lost. People in the world come, they come here on retreat. They ask me, how long you've been here? I answer as another elsewhere, 52 years, but it is a fiction. How long have I been here? Excuse me, I haven't gotten here yet.
For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, this is Judy Valente at the Abbey of Gethsemane.
We're going to meet again right now. And then at 1 o'clock, the judge will begin his remarks. So everybody brought their lunch. You can switch around and meet some new people if you want to. But we're going to eat right at the tables. All right? Let's have. And there's fresh coffee and lots of water back there.
Oh, my God. Good for you.